plate a potential nugget.
Just building on the vantage point insight, I guess it's all the more pronounced when transitions happen, right? When a new CEO takes charge, then discerning what's the right vantage point is that much harder, because you're also trying to make sense of the topography, the characters, sort of the political magnetic forces at play. So do you want to sort of expand on how to think about vantage point, especially in the context of a leader that's transitioning into a new role?
Sure. I mean, for us, that's so when you look at the model of move, again, it doesn't have to be sequential. So the thing that really pops for us, if you're in a big new job, whether you're the CEO or not, is the vantage point. Because literally, whether you're being promoted into that role or you're coming in from outside the organization, all these relationships are new in some way. Even if you're within role, you're looking at things from a different perspective. So your old peers are now your direct reports. And that's a very challenging situation. So we actually encourage leaders coming into a role to look at all the people that are involved in that role from a 360-degree perspective. So it's to really understand, like, what is the agenda? What's needed of me? What kind of relationship do I want to have with my new boss? Even if I'm the CEO, I've got a board to deal with other stakeholders that are around me, like regulators or analysts or whatever, with my team, and then across my organization. So it's actually trying to read what's actually happening there in terms of other people interpersonally, and then how I want to kind of meet that challenge. And there's other things around vantage point that also come into play when you've got a new role. So, for example, there's mandates that are sometimes illusions or not illusions. So you come into a job and you're the new leader in a group, and it's like, yes, you have a mandate to transform the group. And the moment that you do that, you meet resistance from the very people who gave you that mandate. So, you know, there's no amount of due diligence that you can do to actually make sure that that doesn't happen. But how can you explore that in front? So, for example, if you're contemplating going into a new job and you understand what you think the scope of magnitude of the challenge is, if you say, like, well, okay, and what happens if we need to take the group in this kind of organization? And if you hear, oh, yeah, that's okay. Okay, let's keep pushing on that a little bit further. Well, what if that means a massive investment? What if that means a massive transformation? What if that means a new type of acquisition? What if it means a product extension? So you get more and more specific, and if the answer is yes all the way through, it's like, okay, that's not a red flag. But often when you ask those kind of questions, it makes it more real to the person that you're talking to. And they'll say things like, it would depend under the circumstances. So that's a red flag. And that's something to really push on to make sure that you actually, your perception of the mandate is as close to reality as possible. The other thing is just one other thing, which really pops for us for people who get into new jobs, is there's this tendency to want to do too much too quickly. So if you don't read the organization's capacity that you've got, you can kind of make people tip over, and that can make you not succeed. So it's like having enough self-awareness and self-regulation to calibrate how hard you're pushing the organization, and to be able to read them as well. So all those things are vantage points, and then being able to step into other people's perspectives as much as you can step into your own perspective, which is part of diversity and inclusion. All those are important dimensions in a new role too.
Got it. And
yeah, we have a whole chapter on that, by the way, of stepping into. We have two chapters on that. And it's interesting you picked up on that, because the first half of the two chapters is just on the vantage point of a new CEO, a new leader. And then the others are the mindful alertness, the options generator, and engaging the effect change of that leader. So that's great.
I'm reminded of an insight from R. Gopalakrishnan, who studied fault lines in a leadership transition and has authored the book Crash, which profiles 15 high-profile hires who couldn't quite land and despite a lot of fanfare, ended up as a failure. He speaks about the criticality of discerning the pecking order of stakeholders.
So one of the things I learned, I'm not sure where I learned it, how I learned it, but I'm sure I learned it from somewhere or the other, some experience, is if you want to change things in the organization or which you're going to lead or be a leader of, first you have to change yourself. The so-called objective metrics are actually subjective. In the sense, they focus on increased profits by 20%. Diversify into X or Y, which are all fine. But those depend on the context. So we set targets for various companies in February for the year 2021. Who the hell knew COVID was coming? So the context has changed, and therefore the performance metrics automatically change. Coming to the other part, the invisible part, boards are not interested only in your achieving objectives. They are interested in how you achieve the objectives. It is stylish to say, just deliver me the results, I don't care how you do it. But in reality, we are interested in how they did it also. If a CEO is slitting a few necks every night to achieve his results, then you have to accept that there's a criminal case building up. So that's what I mean by the soft part. There are multiple stakeholders. You know, you have so far grown in your career thinking, I have one boss. If I satisfy him, everything is all right. Your board itself has a chairman and directors have been around 20 years. Directors have been around 2 years. And then you have your leadership team, your subordinates, if I may use that word. Then you have your stakeholders, your shareholders. You have your allies, you know, suppliers, vendors, bankers. And depending on the way you act and behave, a pecking order emerges. If you're a very strong domain person, say you've been in the auto industry for 30 years, you joined an auto company, then you pick up the phone and start energizing your old network. You know, of some fellow who supplies very good components. That might be misinterpreted in your new environment. You are doing that because you are head of purchase in some other auto company. You don't sort of bring in all your good buddies. You might have been very strong in recruiting talent, and then you go and fill up the place with people from your old company or perceived to have done so, even whether you have actually done so or not. And people don't like that. So I use the word pecking order of stakeholders. You mean what was your strength until the other day can play out to be a weakness. So while you must have a 360-degree approach to all your stakeholders, without doubt, the angles of the pie keep changing depending on who is the person who's there. I have known situations where, you know, people say that, you know, he came from so-and-so place, he's filled it up with people from that place. It's not at all uncommon in CEO transitions.
I like what Gopal says. Even what seems like an objective metric is often subjective to context. Being able to read the room and discern the various vantage points can be a big advantage as you settle into a new company. Thank you for listening.